Which was called upon Carolyn Jones.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you all for coming today. I'm now told with that. I want to make this short and sweet, just like my dad. I don't bring a sweeter or more gentle than my dad. He's had his so many things. My time is here, not my life, which I'm so able to do. He's helped me to go all to low estate in a very frightening cab driving a car. When I was about 16 or so, and started shopping for my own shoes, pointed out good quality versus poor quality. This came about after showing Dad my latest purchase. I had paid a lot of money for the shoes, but told him a lesser dollar amount when he asked. He said, no, these shoes are very good. You definitely paid more. Dad really tried to teach me patience, but those who know me will tell you I did not learn that. He taught me to be kind, the importance of family and friends, and most importantly, he taught me to love. Dad used to say, every day is a gift. Thinking of him and that great smile of his will now be my daily gift. I miss Dad already, but know he will always be watching over me. I want to thank my strong, wonderful mom for taking such excellent care of Dad all these years. Also, thank you to all of Gentiva Hospice, but Nurse Becky in particular, who lovingly called Dad her little garden gnome. And to the best caregiver we could ever have found, Eric Bay Amasu, who is part of our family. Even though this is a sad day for all of us, my dad would want us to celebrate, and of course, to smile.
And I'm called on Judy to say a few words.
I have a poem for you. Do not weep for me, my child. Let no tears fall from your eyes. Dying by a simple man, and we farewell for our first time. The latest thing I read to you is that we are blood, birds, and monks. The man is born to die from this, that have my heart upon the earth. So let me hear the mournful sound, what we hear about on the ground. I am but a simple man, I need no comfort in friendship. The poem was written by a family friend, whose father wrote a poem. She was born mistress, and the teacher played his son, so it was his son.
I wrote a poem to my dad. We used to watch the golf channel together. And there was a contest to go to Ireland, and I thought it would be really wonderful if we could win. We did not win, but I am still the biggest winner of all because I had my dad. This is called His Pride and Honor. His smiling, sparkling eyes told me I'd made the right decision to learn to play golf. Living late in life, I'm 50-something, can be on there now. I thought it would be wonderful to be able to play golf with my dad. He just turned 90 and still plays during the spring and summer. The first couple of times I went out with him, I was so nervous. When I swung and missed the ball, he would let me know it was okay. He never got mad or made me feel like I was holding things up. He would always say something to boost my confidence. And then say, in the long scheme of things, don't worry about anything. We're just out to have fun. And then he would just give me one of those great big smiles. I felt so lucky. The first birdie I had, I couldn't wait to call him. He was so excited for me. And he wanted to hear every detail. I am so blessed to be able to play golf with my dad. I feel so much pride and honor to be able to take him out golfing. He taught me patience and how to relax. A great life lesson. I love you, Daddy. Shoot.
I'm calling out how Bob Dingle to say a few words in the name of Ellen.
Hello. Alan asked me to say a few words that he wrote previously to his father, and I told him, you know, get on First, I'd like to say a couple things. I'm guessing that when you check in the great beyond for orientation, there's exceptions that you report to. And I'm sure Albert will check into the Turkish Party section first, see his buddies, his sisters, his brothers, his friends. And I know he's got a reserved seat in the front row. And the front row is in front of the rows for VIPs, in front of the rows for the rich and famous. And he's got a reserved seat in that row. And there's a sign on that row that says simply, reserved for the nicest of the nice. Here's Al's words for his father. Today we all wanted to pass into my dad, Albert G. Passed Wednesday at the age of 98 and a half. Not only my family, but all of us have lost one of the nicest, kindest, and cutest men you will ever meet in your life. How do I know this? Ask anybody who has met it and you'll hear the exact same words. I'm very blessed to have one of the best father-son relationships that anybody could ask me. From the time when I moved out of my parents' house at the age of 20 until this passing, I would talk to my dad almost every day. What did we talk about? It didn't matter. It was always fun, whatever the topic was. My dad was a very accomplished shoe repairman. I was very lucky to work with him at the famous Broadway Shoe Renew on Capitol Hill. I couldn't do all the complex work that he did because I was afraid of the machines. Oops. His work was so good that customers drove for miles away to have their shoes repaired. He had a wonderful clientele until the shop closed down in July of 83. After 37 years on Broadway, due to the loss of his lease, customers even signed a petition to keep him there, but it was too late. A few months before I retired last year, I told him to be there for my retirement, and he said, I'll be there. And you were for a year, and I thank you for that. My mom has been nothing short of being a great wife to him and took excellent care of him until the end for 72 plus years. We all thank you, Mom, as you were unbelievable and the hardest worker I've ever seen. Carol, Judy, Jim, and Carl, thank you for all the hard work you've done over the last couple of years for helping my mom and my dad and fulfilling his wish to stay at home. In closing, I'm going to say, Dad, I love you, and I will think of you each and every day, and I will see you again in heaven when my time comes. I would like to thank Pete, but it's not a thankful thing. I'm doing it in honor of Al, and I'll help Alan thank you.
I wanted to start by thanking the family that that kid they had and the kids for involving myself and Ezra Becerrith in on the tribute and funeral of Elvis. It was a big privilege to know him. And then 5 years. I knew him mostly from the synagogue, where we had a few family visits. Up until very recently, Al and Becky came to Ezra Becerrith on Shabbat every week, and we usually had an aliyah, we called it the Teva. And as his voice got softer over the last couple of years, his desire to be there did not wane. And he was a dedicated member for so many years, and we just really appreciated him all. You know, Bob mentioned what it's like in the great beyond. I don't have an inside track on the great beyond, but I can share with you an idea and a vision that our sages tell us in literature, rabbinic literature from about 2,000 years ago. Say that one person came back to another person in a dream after he passed away, and he said, you won't believe what I see there. All the things that are on the top and the priority and are important in this world are not so important in the next world. And all the things that are not so important in this world, they're the priority in the next world. And the extent to which a person develops himself spiritually and ethically in this world, that could be the ticket to the front row seat. In other words, heaven is much more an opportunity close to God for that function, excuse me, of what one does in this world. And Al certainly has the front row seat. Absolutely. His meekness, his humility, his strength of character, all those things are a top priority of great value in the world to come. So say our sages. When I was talking to the family the other day, the Wednesday when Albert passed away. And one thing that I noticed, amongst a lot of these Spartak homes here in Seattle, when you go in to somebody who's passed away after a number of years of rich life, there's a sense of peace in the room. So the family gets along, the people have relationships that are meaningful, productive relationships that people worked on. And that was something that came out, it's almost intangible when you walk into the room at Albert and Bethany's home. You see that, you feel it. I was most impressed by one story about the shoe shop that Al shared with us. And that is when he used to have lunch with his father and or a snack, he had an apple. And Albert could break the apple in half with a hand. I have a grandfather. I had a grandfather who was able to bend nails with his hands. Something about the apple, the vision of the apple. And it reminds me of the story in our tradition that appears in the Torah, in Sefer Bereishit, in Genesis, in which Jacob is on the run from his brother, on the run from Esau. He comes to a well, and there's shepherds there, and he, as Jews normally do, he butted into their business. He said, what's with the story, guys? It's still light outside, and your sheep still have a right to be out the pasture. And why haven't you given them to drink yet? They said, well, this is boulder that was swap in the well. And it takes a bunch of us to get it off the well, and we're waiting for everybody else to get them to get the rock off the well. At which point in time, Yaakov, Jacob approaches the well, and single-handedly lifts the rock off the well and gives the sheep water. So one could say that he was trying to show off for Rachel, for Rachel, who he saw coming in the distance, wanted to show that he was a macho man. But that's not our understanding of the Torah. The characters in the Torah are not superficial characters. They're deep people. Rashi says that when he lifted the rock off the well, it was like we take a cap off of a bottle. It was so easy for him. There's a concept brought out by one of our commentators that says, Kovei Hashem yachlifu koach. People who trust in Hashem have extra energy. This is a recurring theme too in the Sephardic community, whose people, as we know, we had a passing of Joe Pion this week, have enormous resilience and physical energy. And you wonder where it comes from. You just wonder where it comes from. So the idea in the Jewish tradition is that God is the source of all life. That's an idea that the Jewish tradition is introduced to the world, embraced by other religions as well. As the source of life, he's the source of all energy. And somebody who lives his or her life according to those values that God gives in the Torah has extra energy. It has an impact on a person's physical self. So when I heard the story about the apple breaking, about that, you know, the flip of the apple, it reminded me of that theme, that recurring theme of the interplay between physical energy and spiritual strength. And the spiritual strength derives from the strength of character. And that gives me to the second story. On your 70th anniversary, we had a family party that I heard about the other night, the other afternoon, I should say. And Albert pulled a fast one on you, something that was unexpected. And he made a bit of a speech. And he asked you, will you marry him again? And what did you say, Becky? I'll have to think about it. Becky's wry sense of humor, we all come to know and love. Most people would say yes and be very sappy and sweet, but she said, oh, but of course that's just tongue-in-cheek, so she doesn't really have to think about it. And the question is, why would Becky not have to think about it? So I did a bit of the research in the last day or so, and I found an article in Woman's Day magazine in 2007. And they asked Americans, and asked American women, after 20, 30 years of marriage, would you marry your husband again? 44% said yes. 36% said no. and 20% said I'm not sure. That's a scary statistic. But the question that underlies the question of would you marry your spouse again is, do you find this person the qualities that you were anticipating to find when you were courting each other, when you were dating? And the answer to the question is, yes, my expectations have been met and even been surpassed. So when Becky said, tongue-in-cheek, also think about it, she really meant, of course, because what did she see in Albert when they were dating? She saw a humble man. She saw a trustworthy man. She saw a person who was pleasant, whose interaction with people was nothing short of stellar. The indication that his customers petitioned, signed a petition to keep the shoe repair shop open, not to break the lease with the resident of the incumbent of the shoe repair shop. These are qualities that people pick up on in their interaction, daily interaction. And one of the great Jewish values that we learn in our tradition is that a person should always try to be mehuravim abriyot, which means integrated with people. Should be a person that people want to talk to, a person that people want to be friends with. And Albert passed the test on all these levels. He was soft-spoken, he was patient. When he had something to tell the family, I heard a couple of days ago from the family, do it overnight at the family meeting. He was firm, he was assertive, but you can be assertive without being aggressive. And Albert was able to call these brief family meetings and convey what he wanted to convey without ever offending anybody, but just delivering his message in a very easy way, so not only with people in the shop, but with his own family. Albert was very, very personable, warm, and loving. I want to take it one step further. You know, in recent years, the Musar tradition, emphasizing the importance of Jewish ethics, has really taken hold in both the Jewish religious and non-religious communities. And there's a writer named Alan Morinitz from Chicago, who's written a number of books on this topic. And he says that what links the ethical character of a person, the kind of character that we see in Albert, is the Jewish value that appears in the verse of the Torah, Bahalach Zavi Drachav. You should walk in his ways. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 8, chapter 19, chapter 26. Bahalach Zavi Drachav, go in God's ways. So the Talmud asks the question, how do you go in God's ways? How do you follow God? He's an all-consuming fire, he's incorporeal, he's infinite. How do you go in God's ways? So the Talmud goes on to say, Mahu Chanun Achatatanu. Just like he is compassionate, you should be compassionate. We live a virtuous reality. We hear about virtual reality, but how often in our conversation do we hear about virtuous reality? If God is merciful, we should be merciful. If he is forgiving, we should be forgiving as well. And these are not only important ethical guidelines, but they really are the path to becoming godly. And so we talk about a person passing through this world. Unfortunately, it's very sad, but Albert's life was not tragic. His sadly has passed, but he lived. He lived to his potential. He almost made it to 100. 98 and a half years of relationships that are impeccable, of interactions that are a model for all of us. Once again, it's been an honor to be here, and it will be an honor to complete the process and to be involved in the burial. Showing kabod, showing honor to Albert Benavidez, who lived 98 and a half years, a true Ben Adam, true Jew, a person who understood his mission in life and acted according to it. Please rise.